people may think that depression has to be severe to be treated, but it doesn't. You can't lay your hand flat on the table. Then you should find a certified non-treatment.
What's the next step?
There we are.
Hi, Rich.
Hi, Echo.
Hi.
I gotta get my tea ready.
I didn't recognize myself. I lost 27 pounds and 3.5 inches. Introducing the revolutionary Vesta, a one-stop, most effective.
I'm enjoying the Jenny Craig commercial in the background.
Oh yeah, I gotta mute here. Where's my machine?
Hi there.
Let's see.
So are you all settled, Rich?
Oh, I've got the sound settled. I can't figure out. I'm trying to figure out how to get the packet with the agenda up and the of everybody on Zoom up at the same time.
I think if you look at it from the city website, it works. Where the agenda is.
I mean, I'm looking at you and then I'm looking at the agenda and stuff right now. Okay, that did something now. Let me see. Okay. Now I got it because I can see everybody and I can just click on another button and the agenda will come up. So I got that now. So
multiple windows.
Yeah. So I'm really proud that we've got the winter shelter going so well, it seems like.
Apparently, I haven't heard much. And I haven't seen people posting about it online, so I honestly don't know how it's going. In Medford, they actually do a daily Nixle notification. And for some reason, we can't get it together to do that here.
Well, Karen got a Nixle notification on
the first 2 days, and then they stopped for some reason. So I think we have to get Ty to do it, the police chief. And so that's not happening very well. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how many people they've got.
They had like 30 people.
Okay. Where did you see that?
Oh, I just heard it from somebody that was there or something. Yeah. And they said, and I think Linda's got it too.
Yeah. And I tried calling Avram to see if there was anything that they needed, but he didn't call me back. So I honestly don't know how it's going.
Apparently people have been bringing in food.
Okay.
And there were some people said, well, there isn't any heat, but no, there's heat down there. They were bringing in, somebody decided to bring in baked potatoes in tinfoil.
Okay.
So they said, it seemed kind of weird to me, but they said, well, you can put them in your sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Or eat it.
But, that's true.
But if it's nice and warm, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know how long a baked potato would really keep you warm.
I don't know. I don't know either.
But
yeah, so I'm. I definitely like to know more about how it's going.
Yeah, well, I think there are. I mean, and then the news has been out there on everything. So there's been a lot of news about it.
I know, right. As an example.
Yeah.
I would.
I love the poem. Well, we have a quorum of two, so that would get us going here.
Well, we got 6 minutes left yet.
Hmm.
So Linda or Rich, I do have a question for either of you. My term is actually up in April.
So is mine.
What would I need to do to re-enlist?
So generally, in the past, Melissa Hudala, the city recorder, would just send you, I think, an email just asking if you want to continue. And then you just would get reappointed for
another
term. And it usually happens, Rich, it's probably happened to you a couple of times. I think it's pretty simple. And then if someone doesn't want to re-up, then she would, let us know how many vacancies we have. And then we put it out through an advertisement.
Okay. Can I ask,
do we have a vacancy now? Because there was a thing that came out on Facebook and somebody, and it was indicating vacancies in different places. And one of them said the Ashland Housing Commission had a vacancy. And I didn't think we did, but it just said, please sign up. But, you know, it wasn't a city thing. It was somebody else. So maybe they just.
Yeah, I don't think we have a vacancy right now. I think we're full. I'll let Linda talk about that later.
Okay. Yeah.
Linda Rapond is traveling and she is getting herself settled at a Starbucks with Wi-Fi to get to join the meeting. So she should be here pretty soon. And I need to change my.
Just as a sort of legislatively, we've been doing really well in the short session. So, you know, maybe we can't do it on here, but at some point we could have an update on housing and the cooling bill. It looks like it's going through. and at least one of them. And so I think there's been a number of things that we could consider values forward.
And Rich and I have been doing public education on Facebook on a couple of community Facebook groups from when people post things like, why isn't the city doing anything about housing? Or what's Columbia Care? What's wrong with that? Isn't that a terrible, huge, wasteful development? And then both Rich and I have been like weighing in response to these folks saying, well, in fact, the Housing Commission and the city are doing a whole lot of things, and there's a bunch of stuff coming up next year. And the Columbia Care project is not a massive waste of water, which somebody was complaining about. And then there was a lot of confusion about that project, who can live there. There were some people who thought that it was just sort of like anybody who needed affordable housing. They didn't realize that you had to be a Columbia Care client, that it's not going to be open until the fall.
But you don't have to be a Columbia Care client.
It sounded like it. You did when I looked at their website.
25% is reserved for like people with severe persistent illness, but then the rest is available. It's low income housing for families. Okay. I don't know how you access it though. So just because
I would love to have then better information about that, because I'm trying to you know be a source of reliable info about this stuff.
Yeah, and I just got this question from, it must be the buzz around town, because I just got this question from St. Vincent de Paul, because they're all talking about it, wondering how to get their people in, and what it was going to be and whether it was available.
Yeah.
So, I will find out more, just because they haven't had any developments here. So it's new. I don't know what their process will be for leasing. And I didn't even know about fall, so.
You know, one of the things that's going to that we've maybe touched on, but I think that everybody knows, is that both for affordable housing and for mental health housing and for homelessness, we've gone into a regional approach to those services. So it used to be we'd try to get our Ashland, that was, you know, how many Ashland people can we get in? And now we are really serving Jackson County, but and particularly Southern Jackson County, but really it's all of Jackson County. And I think there's a little lack of understanding in the Ashland populace about that.
Yeah.
And one.
I'm just going to take a minute to check my email to see if anybody is having trouble.
We got five now, so we're...
Yeah, looks like we're here. Hi, Reese.
Uh-oh, Gina, why do you have crutches?
I broke my ankle.
Oh, my.
Yes, it wasn't anything exciting or anything like that. You know, I was pulling the trash cans up to the garage. But we had fun snow, but that's okay. I'm on the mend, so it's all good.
There's Kathy.
Yeah, sorry.
Welcome, everybody.
They were in the waiting room, and I didn't see them, so I was getting them in the room.
So do we have people who would be otherwise viewing our, so the people that are here are the people that are on screen at this point? Okay.
Yes. And now that I noticed that there were people in the attendee room that I can't see when I have my whole screen open, I have it open so that we can see people as they come in. And I'll make it clear.
Well, I see Vicki Armstrong. Are you a person that are part of our, how are you part of this meeting?
Yeah, she's part of this meeting tonight. She's presenting on the continuum. Yeah.
So we do have presenters and people.
We do. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Good. Thank you. Well,
Ari, do you late.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Well, welcome, everybody. We do have a quorum, so I'm going to open the what is this? This is the February meeting of the Ashland Housing and Human Service Commission. And the first thing on our agenda is approval of minutes. So has everybody had a chance to review them? Are there questions? I see Jackie's ready to go. Okay, so I'll take discussion or options for change of the minutes. Okay, oh. Heidi.
Oh, you're muted.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. On the first page, it's under Echo Fields update. It says need more organization on volunteers, need policy and agenda for pets. Did you mean policy?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure why it said agenda for pets.
That didn't make sense to me.
I think that might have, I can't remember exactly what word I might have used, but I doubt it was agenda.
Yeah. Somebody could just say apology.
I changed it to need policy for pets.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other typo was on the last page, SOU liaison, Reese. Rosenberg gives feedback that collage college. All I found.
Got it.
Are there others that people want to check in on? If not, would someone move to approve the minutes as corrected?
I move that we approve the minutes from January 27th, 2022 as amended.
Wait. And a second. Okay, so for today, let's all indicate aye by raising your hands. Okay, Kathy, was yours up there too? Okay, all opposed? Any abstentions? Then the minutes have passed. So I got to look at what's... What is that?
Somebody's got some music on in the background.
Oh.
But I think Linda is joining us from a Starbucks. So, because she's traveling. Anyhow.
Okay. Okay. So the next thing is... Kathy is going to give us a presentation on the zone captains.
Thanks, Rich. And thank you, Linda, for inviting me to do this. I'm very excited to share. It's not often I get to share about my experience as a fire survivor and zone captain in Ashland, because most people in Ashland were fire affected, but not fire victims. So I'm going to go ahead and share screen. Can you see my screen okay?
Great.
Okay, so I want to tell you a little bit about Zone Captain. So I work for this nonprofit. We are an organization of fire survivors helping other fire survivors. We have quite a few staff members who went through the Alameda fire, lost their homes or businesses, and are recovering. We also have staff members who are not fire survivors, but we have kind of a philosophy of a ground-up recovery. We work with the top-down resources, and I'll talk about that in a minute, about how that works. But we like to empower fire survivor voices. And I'll tell you a little bit about how I got involved. So this was my home in the Bear Creek Mobile Home Park that burned. It was a sweet little space. As you can see, we had made it an oasis. And I've lived in all kinds of housing in Ashland. I've lived in apartments. I lived in an apartment for 5 years with my kids when I was a single mom, and I was saving money to buy this mobile home with my then fiance. We bought it together. We both came back from being deeply in debt, very financially troubled. I actually started teaching personal finance classes because I was so excited at the results I was getting in rebuilding my life. I wanted to help others. So we bought this mobile home, we renovated it so that it was worth twice as much. We insured it well, and I'm so glad we did. And we were saving and investing, and we were actually planning to live in a stick-built home eventually. Ironically, the fire made it happen faster for us. So that's kind of a strange, you know, blessing that came out of this, is that we were able to purchase a duplex up on Liberty Street, and we rent out half, which helps pay our mortgage in expensive Ashland. We're very thankful. And I wanted to show you this picture because I really believe manufactured housing to be a really reliable way for people to build equity in Ashland. Working class and lower to middle income people. It's a real viable opportunity. And it's actually also a great retirement opportunity for many seniors who love to have, you know, space for a garden and a close connection with their neighbors. And so after the fire, after this home burned, I was the part-time manager of this park. And so I helped the residents get hooked up with resources. I was helping them get their FEMA funds and their Red Cross funds. The owner of the park didn't want me to do any of this charitable stuff, so I just did it on my own time. I then found out about the forgivable loan program that enables people who say they had a mobile home that was $20,000 worth. It was insured for $20,000, you know, an older single wide. And, you know, so you got a pitiful insurance payment for this, right? The forgivable loan program that Pam Marsh developed enables people to add some money to that, you know, say they get 20 grand from insurance and then 35, now it's 50 grand from the state, from the OHCS forgivable loan program. They can then pool those resources together and, you know, have a good start on getting a new home. Now, of course, we know the prices are astronomical, so that's still very difficult for them, even with that state program. So I was helping people with resources and just trying to do the best I could, given how heartbreaking it was, how uninsured and underinsured people were in this park. It's crazy because I was the park manager. I was supposed to receive a notice if they ever canceled their insurance. And I got maybe just a handful, and I always followed up on them, but there were a huge number of people who had canceled their insurance because of COVID. And so it was just heartbreaking to see all these people who didn't have a lot of financial options after the fire. So because I was already helping my neighbors, I got recruited by Zone Captains. And so Tucker Teutsch, who's the executive director, said, "Hey, you're doing what we want people to be doing. Come work for us." So I started working for Zone Captains. And forgive me, I know I have 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Let me know if I go over time, because I tend to talk a lot on this topic. I'm very passionate about it. So I got recruited by this organization. We believe that having a recovery that is led by fire survivors themselves leads to a faster recovery and lower building costs and increasing equity. And you'll see how we've helped do that later. I'll outline some specifics. And let's see here. Okay, so we like to work with the top-down resources. We're definitely not oppositional. We just like to empower from the ground up and connect from the top down. So a lot of our Zone Captain staff are people who lost their homes. Like, for example, myself, obviously I advocate for Zone 6, which is the Bear Creek Mobile Home Park. Lorraine Santana Park advocates for Zone 21, which is Horizon Mobile Village, Royal Oaks Mobile Park, and Holman Creek Estates. So she is the one who advocates for that area. And so you have kind of these different emergent leaders in different neighborhoods. We have Will Volpert, who is our business zone captain, and he's helping empower the fire-affected businesses throughout the valley. So we communicate needs from the bottom up and empower communication. And we also interface with the public sector. I'm so grateful to be part of this meeting. You know, this is one of the ways I'm grateful to stay connected with what's happening with the municipal politics in Ashland around housing and communicate that to, you know, to my organization. It's really a blessing to be here and hear what is going on and communicate that, especially around affordable housing. And we attend city council meetings in the various municipalities as we can. And we participate in the long-term recovery group, the LTRG. And we're very much plugged into their committees and their meetings. So this is the map of the zones. And this isn't even complete. There's actually 29 zones in the Burn Scar. And you can see down in the bottom right-hand corner, that little pink square is zone 6. That's Bear Creek Mobile Home Park, where I lost my home. You can see zone 1 is the Alameda Alameda Street area where the fire started. And then, of course, you know, the fire went, you know, through the valley towards South Medford. And the cool thing about identifying different zones is that they have different needs. The needs of manufactured park homeowners are different from those who lost stick-built homes, from those who lost business residences or other commercial buildings. And so we attempt to meet people's needs based on their neighborhood. And we don't have a zone captain for every single zone. We have 9 zone captains right now. We continue to hire. If you know anyone who wants a job, we particularly are looking for people who have management skills. We're hiring a couple of management positions, and we are always looking for zone captains, either those who are fire survivors or those who have a heart to help fire survivors.
And Kathy, anybody who's bilingual.
Yes, thank you. Yes, we are. That's a big lift. We're always looking for bilingual staff, and we have 2 bilingual zone captains right now, but we could use more, and particularly among our management. Yeah, that's huge. And Echo has been involved with us. She's been doing needs assessments and helping connect fire survivors with resources. So yay. So we actually have a lot of volunteer zone captains too. You know, Echo is one. We have a couple folks in Talent and Phoenix who help advocate for stick-built homeowners who just happen to have day jobs and they're too busy to be a staff member. So here's a couple bullet points of the ways that we're ideally working on creating equity and empowering leaders. So we're working on identifying, you know, who's already acting as a leader in their neighborhood. We do quite a bit of training around equity and being trauma-informed. It's been really interesting working myself as a fire survivor with other fire survivors who are helping fire survivors. It can be, you know, challenging on people's nervous systems. And so having, you know, having a process of care while we're doing our work, caring for each other and ourselves is very important. Sorry, I think there's an alarm going off. Hold on a second. I'm going to see if I can address that just a minute.
So I got, while she's doing that, I got involved with this group shortly, not too long after the fire, because an SOU alum kind of was one of the first people who started this organization. His name is Misty Munoz. And then it just kind of grew from there. So, and Kathy's back.
Sorry about that. It was my husband's phone. I was like, how does this work? Okay. Yeah, so we're continually evolving how to follow what fire survivors need. It's always changing, and I'll talk a little bit about some of the specific projects we're doing related to FEMA parks and helping people with affordable housing. Those seem to be the biggest needs right now, but we're really always working on listening to what's being needed and meeting with residents in our zones and advocating for the zones with our elected officials. Does anybody have any questions so far? I know I'm kind of just speeding through this.
Okay, Jackie, go.
I just want to say thank you so much, Kathy, for all the work you're doing. It's just incredible. And to be trauma-informed and have those trainings working with people, that's huge. One of the things I heard recently, and maybe you can sort of set me straight on it, is people who have been put into the FEMA trailers, I thought I read that they are suddenly going to be charged quite a bit of money for the FEMA trailer, and that they have not been prepared for that. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yes. The relationship with FEMA is fraught. Let's just put it that way. And bless them. You know, I'm so grateful those FEMA trailer parks exist as temporary housing, but we are working really diligently right now to help explain to people the negotiation process for the rental program, because it is really difficult right now. They're being charged automatically $1,650, I believe, a month, unless they contest. And the process for contesting is very opaque and difficult, especially for Spanish speakers, but for everyone. And so we're working on helping people understand that. Yeah, that's a big piece. We did a big canvassing effort in November to help people understand their negotiation rights around the purchase program, because that's another thing that people don't understand. And we're about to do another big canvassing around this rental program because it is so difficult.
Jackie, they probably know this at ORA. I assume ORA's fielding some of these calls.
Yes,
would be my guess. So what Kathy and I know from both zone captains and the LTRG is that it seems like the first place to send people is to the Access Community Resiliency Center phone number, which is 833-669-0554. And that is supposed to get them to somebody who will start to clarify what the situation is with the rent. The media coverage, I think, has been appalling on this. The local TV stations have been pretty much just sort of reading press releases and not really going out and asking questions.
Yeah, and agreed.
I have found that incredibly frustrating. And so there are a lot of people who are very panicked and very afraid. There was one person on Facebook who, you know, people get very confused about what they read or see online. So somebody thought that they were being compelled to buy their FEMA trailers. That's not true. They have an option for purchase. Yeah.
And we actually are elevating quite a few systemic needs around difficulties with FEMA representatives. And it's quite a big scene. There also has been a Spanish speaking forum on the FEMA programs and also the housing grants. So I'll put the link to that in the chat afterwards. And thank you, Echo, for mentioning that. You know, yes, Access is the first point of contact to help understand the rental program.
Yeah,
we have ORA has hired Spanish speakers and so navigators. And so I think they have that information, but I will check on that because we are getting calls in Spanish. What do we do? And then we're trying to send them on to the proper, you know, location. So
that's great. We also have a one pager on the rental program negotiation process and the sales program negotiation process. So I can also email you those if that would be helpful.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, they're in both English and Spanish.
Kathy?
That's great. The more we can cross over and share information, the better. That's great. Right.
So Jackie, I tried to get CAPS connected with the long-term recovery group meetings about this. I got her contact info to William North, who's the Rogue Community Health person that usually runs those meetings. The chair of the long-term recovery group is Karen Wheeler. But Cass hasn't actually appeared at any of the meetings I've been at. I think it would be incredibly helpful to have somebody from ORA at some of the LTRG meetings. There are numbers of them.
And you're also welcome to come to our zone captains meetings. One of the reasons I shared that slide that had our website on it is I highly recommend that you sign up on our website, anyone who wants to be a fire survivor ally. Even if you didn't lose a home and you just want to be an ally, then you'll get invited to all of our meetups. And the Zone Captains meetup on Tuesday night is a huge resource download. You know, we talk about all this stuff there. So I highly recommend. I know I actually spoke with one of your Spanish speaking reps at Aura recently, and she might be a great person to come and get the download on a Tuesday meetup. So I want to just share a little bit. I don't know how I'm doing on time here.
Kathy, let me
just
say,
finish this up.
Right. I would just run through your slides in a few minutes, and then we can take a couple more questions and then we'll be done.
Okay, sounds good. So we do offer these social support and resource meetups 3 times a week. On Mondays, we have a 6 p.m. for site-built homeowners. And Tuesdays is the big one that I lead, 6 to 8 p.m. for general fire survivors. I mean, it's geared towards manufactured and renters, but it tends to be everybody. A lot of people. And then first and third Thursdays is the fire affected business meetup. We do a lot of resource referrals. Like Echo was saying, you know, all the housing help tends to be from Access, and they're great. Just a fantastic agency, really responsive. The CCR that she mentioned is one office there. And then there's the housing home ownership center that governs housing grants, such as the forgivable loan for manufactured homeowners. And we send people to their disaster case managers and free counseling with Bridges to Wellbeing. Let's see, we're doing advocacy for marginalized groups. I think I already talked about that. And I will share that link to the UNATE Spanish forum because that's really a great download of information. And we helped empower them. We gathered all the info in Spanish and English, and then they ran with it and did the presentation. And then I want to just share, I think I missed something there on that slide. So the resource updates, yeah, this is, our meetups are constantly an incredible download of the latest resources on the FEMA park rental and sales programs and on affordable housing projects. And we're doing specific projects in the zones. So we have a kiosk project that we are installing kiosks for information in the FEMA trailer parks. And it's exciting, the forgivable home loan advocacy, that's my passion project, because this is an example of one of the 10 homes in Bear Creek Mobile Home Park that have been rebuilt due to my advocacy. They got the forgivable home loan. They were able to install it in an affordable way for them, and it's beautiful. And I'm just so happy for them, these folks. And there's, you know, this is one of 10. There's 10 homes now. And ironically, this photo is actually in the spot just to the left of where our home used to be. Our home used to be just to the right of that carport there. And here's one more slide just sharing, you know, how we interact with the long-term recovery group that Echo was mentioning. You know, I'm sort of in the middle here along with our management team. You know, we hear from the zone captains and the fire affected community what they're needing, and then we pass that information on to those who have power to affect change in the valley, municipalities and the long-term recovery group and various community-based organizations. Okay, one last slide with the website. I just want to share that, you know, in case anyone does want to sign up to be a fire survivor ally through our network. It's great because then you receive all the information about all the meetups and the latest resources. So thank you all.
Great. That was a great presentation. Thank you. Let me just see, is there any last questions that people want to do? And I think, Kathy, you'll always be here. So we on the commission can always address questions to you at a later point.
Sure.
So our next part on the agenda is going to be Vicki Armstrong talking about giving a presentation on a coordinated care organization, right? Or continuum of care.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for letting me be here. I have more of just a a chat to share with you than a presentation, but I did want to thank Linda for inviting me and all of you for letting me arrive. The Continuum of Care is a HUD mandated national strategy, basically for any community that receives HUD funding for housing. So the Jackson County Continuum of Care has been around in a variety of iterations for probably 20 or more years. It was originally known as the Homeless Task Force, and around 2017 became iterated in the way it exists today with a board and some work groups. And it's the purpose of continuums of care is to end homelessness. The strategy, the practicality perhaps of that phrase is maybe something that can be discussed. And I think we tend to look at it more as addressing homelessness, recognizing that there are some things that may not have an end. So, but also not letting that be a disincentive to being vigorous and strategic and intentional about how we address the situation that we're faced with now. I don't know how much you all know about HUD, so some of this is just maybe you already know. HUD defines chronic homelessness. In order to be chronically homeless by HUD's definition, an individual must have a mental health diagnosis associated with them. So there are a number of people in our community who are homeless for a variety of reasons who do not, and maybe for an extended period of time, but who don't qualify in HUD's definition as chronically homeless because they don't have a mental health concern. And it was a very interesting experience for me. One of the things that COCs are mandated to do is the point in time count, which is meant to be done in the last 10 days of January on a single night to count all the people who are homeless in a given region. The HUD mandate does allow for an ongoing count after the night for 7 days to pick up any people you may not have counted on that original night, but it's all intended, even if I count 5 days after the original count day, I'm meant to find out where that person spent the night of the count. So it's all meant to kind of get it onto that single date. We did it on the 24th of January, and it will be interesting to see, you know, how that shakes out. Things that there's a couple of different definitions of homelessness in the federal government. One is McKinney-Vento, and McKinney-Vento is often associated with schools and education and allows people to be counted who are doubled up, who are couch surfing, some of those situations. But for the point in time count, those people, that those situations don't count as homeless. So the point in time count is a thing, and McKinney-Vento is a thing, but I'm not sure that we have a good grasp community-wide about all the different circumstances that really exist, particularly in light of the fires. I think a number of households, families, individuals, et cetera, are in doubled up situations, are in precariously housed situations, maybe because they've found a temporary fix, but it's not a permanent stable home, and they don't count according to HUD's definitions.
Vicki, can you take questions along the way, or do you want to go through a presentation?
No, I'm happy to take questions whenever.
Well, I have one just right away because of the point in count. Do we have a number now?
We won't have a number till April. It takes a little while to crunch those numbers through.
Okay. So that somebody that told me a number was not accurate.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that the last couple of years, we've averaged around 750 homeless people in Jackson County.
Okay.
And I would ask all of you how that, what is that number? How does that resonate with you? Does that feel accurate? Don't know, huh? Yeah, Jackie.
So we just had an Aura board meeting the other night, and Ken Gutcher was giving us some numbers of the number of homeless people in the 2021 report. He was reporting on point in time. And yes, the number for Jackson County was 727 per 10,000 people for Jackson County. So you said around 700, right?
That 727 is a countywide number. I don't, that's not per 10,000. That's just the number.
Okay. He has it down as per 10,000. So I don't understand that. Nah. But one of the things that concerned us was that the 2016 report in Jackson County compared to the 2021 report is showing that it almost doubled the homeless.
Yeah. Count.
And that's the concern, I think, that we all just really are focusing on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that and again, I don't have an agenda particularly, except that I like numbers to represent fact. And I think that the reason I bring up the McKinney-Vento and the Alameda Fire survivors is that those numbers don't fully represent our community situation. And when we have to count inside of a definition, we have to live with that. And so, so the point in time is fine, and I'm not going to disparage this honorable tradition. But at the same time, I think we just have to recognize that it's a limited assessment, if we can. And other assessments or strategies to clearly understand our community needs are going to be as important, if not more important, as we move forward and look for housing alternatives.
So I cut you off. So go ahead and continue with the presentation.
I really have no idea what I was
saying.
I guess if I just got back to sort of generally the COC, I guess I would, and I think this is a little bit tricky. If you Googled COCs across the nation, there's something like 394 of them, and everyone is iterated in its own way. So there isn't a cookie cutter approach to what a COC is or how it should impact the community. And probably equally, depending on how they're led, some COCs are government led, some are nonprofit led. Our COC encompasses both myself as the coordinator and our HMIS, or our Homeless Management Information System lead, Debbie. And so we do both of those things within the same organization. And in some of the bigger COCs across the country, those responsibilities are separated. And one of the reasons COCs exist and the fundings in the funding stream for HUD is because of coordinated entry. Have you all heard of coordinated entry? Oh, Jackie's shake, nodding her head. And it's, I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest. This is where I'm not political, so please, if I get into trouble here, I'm so sorry. But our coordinated entry system's a hot mess. I'm just going to tell you that. The idea behind coordinated entry is people come to any touch point in the community, they receive an assessment, and that assessment prioritizes them by need. And those needs may come from mental health concerns, physical health concerns, justice involvement, any of those things. And the higher they score, the higher their need is and the lower barrier to service required. So that's sort of the strategy. The assessment tool that's currently in use is the SPDAT, and it's used, I don't know, probably at the 80% or better level across the nation, though HUD is no longer going to support it because it's not considered to be very justice informed at this time. So one of my leadership roles that will be rolling out in the coming months, now that we're past the pit, will be looking at a new assessment strategy that has more justice built into it and also provides a more accurate, perhaps, place for us to begin. Yeah. So,
well, I have a question in relation to that. I'm on the So Healthy Policy Committee. Are you working with So Healthy on the issue of justice informed continuum or coordinated entry?
I am not yet. So the way I'll just tell you how we're approaching coordinated entry. Coordinated entry is a list of folks who have been entered into the Homeless Management Information System and given a prioritization. And when I took this job back in September, there were 1,248 people on the list. Now the number is closer to 4,000. But what we've tried to do is, and the list doesn't it doesn't, it requires a lot of provider participation so that if you put someone on the list at, I'll just say Aura, because Jackie, you're sitting there, but, and then that person gets a home or they leave the area or something happens, if you don't go back in and remove them from the list, they stay on the list. And so I'm going through and doing what we're calling a cleanup of the list to try to just get, and of the 1200 names that I started with, I've called or reached out to 800 people. And so I'm nearing the finish line on this. And once we get there, then that's kind of, we're going to consider ourselves at sort of a ground zero place, and we're going to start rebuilding from there. So yes, at that time, I do want to talk to So Healthy. I want to talk to everyone who's using the system, everyone who's referring folks through the system, because we do want to create a user-friendly. And I'm going to tell you, some of the agencies I've talked to do not find HMIS user-friendly. And so I've worked with the people in the technology stream and said, what can we do to make this user-friendly? Can we, I mean, the SPDAT takes an hour or more. And so that's not a thing that everybody wants to do. It asks a lot of really awkward, uncomfortable, maybe none of your business kind of questions. And so addressing all of these things take time, and it's different for every population that we're serving, which things are more relevant and which things are more cringy, if I can use that modern vernacular right there.
It's so frustrating to have so many staff hours spent on filling out 20 pages of not always useful information and often very personally prying and stressful, you know, for the guest. And then the grants that we apply for, we in Aura, 34 grants, but these grants are not covering the staff time. And so you get this minimal percentage to cover staff time, which is the most important thing we do is navigation and counseling, right?
Yes.
They want to just help us with the building and renovation and all that. Well, it's fine to have a shiny castle, but if you can't fill it with, you know, the people with the skills who can help our guests. So thank you for anything you can do to reduce that staff time on what seems like needless information. I don't know.
Right. And the cat chasing their tail situation in that situation, Jackie, that is heartbreaking, is that same the funding requires that you participate in coordinated entry, which doesn't drive a result, but you have to do it, which takes time, which doesn't drive a result, and we go round and round we go, right? I see you, one sec, Heidi. I just wanted to add that I am the biggest champion for supportive services funding. I mean, I will go to the floor of whatever government entity will have me and champion the importance of supportive services, because in that beautiful castle that they have helped you build, if you can't keep people in it, what have we done? We've spent the money, we've given the time, and that there's no disparaging the people who made it to the castle. I'm again just using your word, but there, it's just going to take time. It's unreasonable.
$20,000 a month for operating fees.
Yeah, it's unreasonable to expect.
It has to be private donor raised.
Yes.
So if the community doesn't support the staff, which is the heart of what we do and what most organizations, it's the heart, it's very difficult to come up with sustainability.
Totally.
Yes, Jackie, we got your point. Let's move to, because we got to go through all of this.
Go ahead, Heidi
is next.
I also think it's really important to talk to the houseless community, members in the community, because when I was more directly involved in that process, especially in the point in time count, there were many individuals who did not want to give information, didn't want us to report them as homeless. And the count is always not fully representative. But, you know, it's really important to talk to the clients that we're trying to help about how we could more in a more sensitive way ask them the questions that they don't want to share the answers with the broader world because there's trauma associated with it. And I just think if we want to accurately help people who are unhoused, we need to find a better way of interfacing with them so that we could truly help them.
Absolutely. And I think this does get to some of Jackie's point as well, because in my experience, Heidi, the way we get there is through relationship building. And mm-hmm. And that's a progressive thing, right? And so if you guys will have me back another time, I'll bring a couple of diagrams about my vision for the future of HMIS that shows, like I talk about, as a wedding cake, but it's really a progressive investment so that we're not asking people questions that are too deep or too personal when we don't have the relationship yet. And when we haven't evolved to that place yet, that we are taking a more person-centered, careful approach. And also recognizing that not only that, you know, people may take 4 or 5 touches before they're ready to answer some of those questions, and simply showing up for service doesn't immediately say, okay, I came here and I need a toothbrush, but that doesn't mean I want to answer 50 questions and tell you everything about my life. I just want that support today. So
Gina?
That's the vision I'm trying to work with, both the people who do the programming to make the system work and the people who use the system. So there's a bit of work there, but that's where I'm going. Counselor Duquesne, am I close?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And thanks, Rich, for calling on me. Vicki, thank you for your presentation and all of everyone contributing to this conversation. But something that I thought about after Heidi mentioned what she mentioned and all of the comments that were going back and forth between you, Vicki, and Jackie, is that having a board, on the board, when I hear building relationships and feeling more comfortable with the questions and the answers, and just how can we really take care of the needs of the unhoused, on your boards or advisory boards, do you have anybody on the board who was previously homeless or unhoused? That's a direct communication. Do you have anything like that?
That's a great question. The COC board is, it is a requirement, strong recommendation of HUD that exists. And that there is a person who is seated on the board with that, though in the time I've been here, I have not met him. So I don't know if he's still around. My time in the community and just reaching out, doing street, you know, going out with street outreach, meeting with different service organizations has also allowed me. I mean, I came here with some relationships with some formerly homeless people. So we are looking to fill that seat more robustly with someone who is engaged and still interested in participating and being a part of that. And I think I may want to bring two folks because I have sort of a very young person who's recently, but most of the time that they spent homeless was in their teens. And so that's a different experience than someone who is a veteran who was homeless in 20s and 30s. So those are the two people I lean most into when I'm talking about stuff, but yeah,
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I looked at Aura's board, and I don't believe anyone on there is formally unhoused. And I think that that's a very important piece to that communication and the service that I'm sure you want to give. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a work group of the COC called the Homeless Task Force, and there's 270 odd people invited. And of that group, depending on, I think it seems to be mostly dependent on the topic, though I haven't quite worked out what the lure is, but we get a fair number of currently and formerly unhoused folks who do speak out at that time. And so that's a valuable platform. Echo.
Quick question. I seem to remember that our prior mayor used to attend the continuum of care meetings. Linda, am I remembering that correctly? correctly, do we have anybody from Ashland City Government who's attending meetings of the COC?
We do not at this time, though that vacancy is recognized, and executive committee meeting in January. The city manager, Brian Chotun was going to, because you all have a new city manager now, right. Brian was going to reach out and see if it, him or her, whoever your new city manager
is. Yeah, his name is Joe Lessard, L-E-S-S-A-R-D.
Okay. And invite him or sort of bring him into the loop about what the COC is about and see if that's something that he'd be willing to participate in.
Right.
Definitely one representation.
Good. Thank you.
And I do attend those meetings as well, not as a voting member, but I just attend them to stay updated on what's going on with the COC.
And because Linda knows everything.
We know. Thank God.
So are there other questions? Well, thank you for that. Gosh, I mean, I do think we'll have to take you up on your offer to come back again at another time to look at that, because it's raised up. I mean, I just learned so much just out of this, particularly I'm thinking about the number of homeless that are out there now. I think that is not something that's in the awareness of the public. And I think we can kind of take that in as a commission and act accordingly. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And the other thing that I'll just plant this little seed so that when we chat next time is the idea of continuum. I think we just really need to start thinking outside the box about what housing looks like, and that there isn't just one cookie cutter, one model, one strategy, but we need to be imagining just so many different things. And that is like to meet. So if you guys are on board, then I'm your friend. No, just kidding.
Well, I hope that's our commission. So Linda, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I think that the Continuum of Care Board is important to this group, because I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, all of the communities in Jackson County really do coordinate on a regional basis around the issues of homelessness. So while we each, you know, Medford has their things going on and we have our things in, you know, maybe Central Point or the Upper Rogue area is doing their own, you know, outreach programs and finding ways to house people. But it really is the way that we coordinate together. It is, I mean, that's part of the HUD mandate, is that they provide funding. And then we as a community define what that coordination looks like through this body. And that the other piece of that is that we have a housing inventory chart, which goes hand in hand with the point in time count, theoretically, in HUD's eyes. And the housing inventory chart really recognizes the number of beds, not units, beds that we have for certain subpopulations of homelessness. So we're supposed to sort of meld those two things and recognize when we have gaps or holes for certain new populations or existing populations, and then try to work to create those resources to meet those needs. And that every year we have an application process through the COC that is put out through the COC and the Homeless Task Force, and then new organizations or existing organizations can apply for grants to essentially serve those populations that we have realized we have a need for through that point in time and housing inventory chart, and through our regional collaboration and the discussions with the different groups and recognizing those needs. So I feel like it's really holistic, and it's holding a place for the whole community, because, you know, there's a recognition that homelessness is regional. It's not, you know, just Ashland homeless people and Medford homeless people, or, you know, but that they are moved through the communities, and that it's going to take all of us working together to help create those resources. Anyway, that's my plan.
Well said.
Yes.
So thank you, Vicki. And
thank you.
We'll look at the next thing on the agenda is really a short report from the Manufactured Home Policy Work Group. And Kathy and I were part of that. And so we're going to, and Linda, you were at some of the meetings, right?
Yeah, I was just at the one meeting. So I missed the first meeting. So I'm definitely deferring to the two of you. And I'm going to step out for just a second, but I'll be right back.
Okay. So Kathy, do you want me to go first and then you fill in your piece? or?
You know, I don't feel comfortable commenting at all because my brain was wrapped around presenting on Zone Captains today. I didn't even review the notes. Okay. So
that's all right. So let me just say that we have a work group that's met a couple of times. And in the first time, we kind of set out some kind of rules about how we were going to participate as a work group and goals. And then we kind of took research pieces that people, this is kind of the way that work groups work. People took different pieces to go out and look. And one of the first questions, because we're looking at the model that Portland uses for protecting mobile parks by using a zone change with an overlay over existing mobile parks. And so that was the model that we were looking at. And so one of the first questions was, what would that look like in Ashland? And so we have people on the work group that came and presented to us the time before who've come and are actively, really actively looking at where do we go. But the first question we wanted was to really hear from the city and Brandon Goldman about what that kind of effort would be in Ashland to do that kind of zoning change. And so he came and gave us at the second meeting a really excellent comprehensive view of that. And the end result, the bottom line is that that process of zone changing and what we're looking for, at least in Ashland, the state zoning rules, takes a long time. And it's not an easy process. And so we agreed at the work group that we were going to follow Brandon's suggestion that our first goal would be to bring this effort within the housing strategy program that we are doing as a housing commission and as a city. And so everyone agreed with that, although the end result is that it's not something that we're going to do in the next few months. It's going to be that process is going to take some time, but people were committed to being part of that. Part of that is reaching out to other mobile parks. Part of that, and where Kathy was helping us, is we're looking outside of Ashland at mobile parks that either burnt down or are otherwise needing of protection and doing some of the research there. So I guess the bottom line is that that work group is going to continue meeting, but mostly on like a monthly basis. We're not going to, it'll be as needed as we move forward within that concept of being part of the housing strategy that is going to be unfolding. Saying that, the other part that we looked at was what have other cities, particularly we looked at Talent and Phoenix to see what we had heard that Talent had something similar to Portland to protect their mobile parks. And so there was a connection that we made with the folks in Talent, and they sent us a copy of their mobile park protection zoning ordinance, I would say. And somehow in Talent, they passed that ordinance. It looks like kind of what we wanted to do in a very expedited fashion. It's different than Portland, but it seems like it accomplishes the same thing. But reading their document, they say they've got it in place and they did it fairly quickly, probably because of the threat that happened when all their mobile parks burnt down. They wanted to make sure that mobile parks are what comes back up within those, each one of those areas. So that's kind of the report of where we're at. People are looking in any space they can to find out something that will help us look at. We have the Portland model. We're now trying to see what an Ashland model would look like. So, Kathy, did you want to add anything? Did that bring up anything? Or
no, I have my action items, and that's what I'll focus on. I'll be able to share more next time.
Yeah. Okay, so our next point on the agenda is...
So what are you doing? What are you doing next? What's the timeline for the work group?
Well, I think we have a meeting in a month, and people, we haven't, for example, the talent ordinance came out after we had our last meeting. So one of the things we'll probably look at is how did that develop? And so we've each got assignments to bring back to those meetings, but when the Ashland housing strategy moves forward, people will want to be involved in that with this goal.
And another question. The person who did the presentation last meeting, Cynthia Detman, I think, is she included in your conversations?
Absolutely. She's probably the pusher in the thing. And so we do have a couple of people from that group that are really anxious and going. And I think to their credit, they were looking as how fast can we get it. And when they met with Brandon, they sort of respected the timeline that probably looks better for us in Ashland. And so
and then that, I have one more thing. So, you know, that Rich and I both kind of are out there on Facebook. So monitoring discussions around housing. And so something that came up in some group was a comment from a person about the mix of affordable housing. And this person said that while apartments are all well and good, she really didn't want to be in an apartment or a townhouse. She wants a mobile home. She wants a manufactured home in a park where she has a little bit of her own separate private backyard where her kids can go out and play, not just common area, and not like in Snowberry, I guess what her perception was is that people were who live there are being told to like take their kids to the park down the street, but she said that wouldn't be working for her. So something that I think we have to acknowledge in the housing production strategy is that manufactured / mobile homes is a type of housing that's kind of like a single family residence, except it's not stick built. But it provides, like you have your own walls, you're not sharing a wall with other people, you know, even though you might be packed in fairly densely. So I'm keeping her comment in mind as I think about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good segue to our next point on, somebody.
Gina has her hand raised, Rich.
Oh, okay. Gina. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Hello.
No, I was thinking I would just call you later. Rich, I would like to know who was the person that you spoke to in talent that you got that information from, because you have the Portland model, now you have the talent model. Talent is much closer to us and it seems a lot more feasible. Who did you speak to
It was Eleanor Pomeraff,
oh, okay,
who's a city councilor, I believe, from Talent. Yes. And so segueing in, our next thing is Linda's going to talk with us about what I think is our biggest, well, we have some money to give away, but we also have the housing production strategy. So Linda, do you want to give us an overview of where we're going?
Yeah, and I don't, I'm just giving you a brief update. So Brandon and I are meeting regularly now with the consultants, Echo Northwest, regarding this process. And we have a new timeline, which, and we're meeting again on Monday. So while we have a timeline that is sort of loose, as you can see from the memo in the packet, where it's like February to May and March to August, and then it has a list of things. So it's not really tight. But as we move along, we sort of tighten up that timeline. So the thing that we're doing right now is we are reaching out to different sectors of the community and different members of the community and, you know, professional groups, to people, the subcommittee that is going to be working on this, the advisory committee. And so if the next item will be for you guys to select a couple of people to be on that committee. And then the sort of kickoff presentation about this process is going to be at the Planning Commission meeting on March 22nd. And you are all absolutely welcome to attend and encouraged to attend. And it will be via Zoom. And that's where the consultants will talk about this process and what's going to be, you know, what they're going to be doing. However, the bulk of the work that this group will be doing is the public engagement events. And specifically, the one that is called out is a rent burden meeting. So we will host a meeting that will be a public engagement event, but that will also serve as our annual rent burden meeting. And so that's going to be a part of the process. And I did include sort of the broad scope that the consultants have outlined for the outreach and engagement opportunities. So there's going to be a few different engagement opportunities, and I believe that this commission will be planning probably along with the consultant or involved in some way with each of those activities.
Can you give the dates on that, Linda, the general dates around those meetings?
Well, you know, at this point in time, what we have, so we sort of firmed up a little bit, and I can share this with you. Let me see if how do I do this? Here it is. This is what we are, push the word share. There we go. This is what the consultant has provided at this point. So we've already done, you know, these first two. So sometime in March is going to be the first advisory committee meeting. I think they have, it's hard to see all these colors, especially when I'm going to minimize this down to just me. So it looks like they're planning an open house. Well, I don't think the open house is on here. And you can see where your meetings are with, and these two meetings, one is in September and one is in November, is really going to just be that coming back to you to share the information that they have thus far. And then you can see, you know, they should have a completed draft by January, and then the final draft thereafter. And then it needs to go, you know, back to the commission or to the council by April. But then in the meantime, they are planning five meetings over the course of 9 months for the advisory group. Somewhere in here is going to be an open house. Part of that is going to be the work that the commission is working on. The green ones are the planning commission meetings. And as you can see, like we were already behind, we were planning for February, but that didn't work out. Let's see, what else am I missing here? Because I've got
the yellow is HHS.
Yes, the yellow is you guys. And so, you know, all of this is sort of subject to change based on what's needed, but this is where we're at now. And these two meetings, the September and November meeting, are really going to be for, you know, that sort of feedback from you guys coming to you with sort of where they're at and the work that's been done in order for you guys to weigh in. But in the meantime, you know, the other pieces that you guys are going to be working among yourselves and with the consultant on doing some of these outreach events, probably including the open house. And I think, you know, that rent burden meeting. And I think there might be, did they have some other, well, yeah, an online engagement opportunity too. So that's going to be more like the Open City Hall sort of online questionnaire that we've done in the past. And so all of this, I'll stop my share now so I can see you again. Oh, that wasn't what I meant to do. Oh my.
diverticulosis. I know about that.
Do you? Because I don't know anything about
that. I do. It's not fun.
Yeah. Is there a special diet? Because if that...
There can be. We'll talk later.
Yes. We'll talk about that later because, yeah, we're having issues with that right now in my household. Yes. More than you needed to know. But we got to get that under control. Yes. To say that.
Okay. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
That, Reese, I'm thinking about work for you. We know that SOU students are particularly rent burdened. Yeah. I want to be really sure that the voice of SOU students get into this document around that issue in particular. Will you keep me and Reese and Chris too, I think, like when we should bring that up in that whole process?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something we can advocate for as well, is to make sure that any of our outreach efforts are reaching all of the different populations
exactly.
I think are really important to be included, especially with the, you know, weighing in on the priorities, because that's, you know, there's a lot of opportunities, but we're only going to be able to act on those, you know, a few of them at a time. So
I have a thought about how to do that. On campus,
okay. Well,
and which involves maybe connecting and Chris or Reese, maybe connecting with the folks running the food pantry on campus, because I imagine the food pantry users are also rent burdened, and that seems like a point of contact that could be useful.
Okay, so let me see if our next step tonight or today is to find folks for the advisory committee. So let me just tell everybody that I would like to be part of that. I'm not going to be chair after April, but I'm disappointed. Am I understanding that we can only have two people on that? And that's a rule of some sort.
Well, it's not a rule. It's, I think it's, you know, there's going to be someone from Surge, someone from Planning Commission, maybe two from Planning Commission. There's going to be someone from Conservation Commission. But then we also have to have the development community. We've invited a mortgage broker, which is something we've never had. But I'm particularly excited about, because this year, for the first time ever, you know, we have had multiple mortgage lenders tell us that they can't loan on houses in the affordable housing program because of the way our deed restrictions are written. And this was not the case before. I don't know what changed in underwriting. And so this has become something that's come up over and over in these outreach meetings that we've had with developers too, is that when we say, oh, you know, we want to prioritize mixed use developments through some sort of strategy, then the feedback we get is lenders won't lend on these things for these reasons. So this time we're trying to get some lender perspective in there. So probably going to have two lenders, one that's more commercial lender and one that's more of a sort of residential lender to give us feedback on the structure of these things and what works and doesn't work these days. What was the other one? I think there's a couple of developers, a representative from SOU, from the SOU Housing Department. Some of you may remember him. His name is Noah Hurley. He applied to be on this commission before. So anyway, I think it's just a matter of if you get too many people, it becomes unwieldy.
Well, let me just throw out who would like to join in this fund. Oh, yeah. I got Echo. Y'all, okay.
So, Rich, you're throwing your name in, right?
Right, I did. I'm okay. So if everybody's okay with it, Echo and I are going to do the representation from this, and it looks like we'll have to be assertive within that group of people that are there so that we at least balance off two developers and two mortgage lenders and all the other people. Okay. So
I just like to say I have great confidence in the two of you.
Okay.
Well, you guys will be tasked with bringing back the information that we're getting through each meeting, you know, back to this and how the process is going. And you might end up taking the lead on the outreach work as well.
Yeah, I think the outreach part we can as a commission really, I think we're going to have to dig deep on that. And I liked Echo's connection with SOU, but I mean, there's so many other places that we can do that work with and come up with a housing production strategy that is really equal to the kind of housing crisis that we've got right now. So, okay. So the next thing on the agenda is, Heidi, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I just saw in the news yesterday that UC Berkeley is having a huge problem with students, many students in one house in neighborhoods, and that a judge just ruled that they have to decrease their enrollment because it's adversely impacting neighborhoods in that community. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really timely that we talk about housing strategies for students, because we don't want our community to feel burdened by students, but we want students in our community, and we need to provide affordable places for students to live. So I think it's really timely that we add this, have a voice for this in this process.
Well said. Linda, can we basically have a housing production agenda item on each meeting as we go? And we've got so many things to do, but I think if we're going to be assertive about this, I think we're going to need to stay in touch with it monthly. Okay. So I think we're on liaison reports. So
I think Linda has a report or just wants to provide an update about.
I just want to follow up on a couple of things. One is there's a request for information about the attendance policy for commissioners. And Linda has that for us. Do you have it? You can put it up on the screen.
You know, do I have it open still? I actually ended up printing it out because, well, let me see here if I still have it. I thought I did. Well, no, I think I closed it. It was on, so it's, I'm going to read it. It's chapter 2, or no, yeah. Why did it print out like that? Anyway, it's the municipal code, and it's 10.025, meetings and attendance of the general all commissions and committees. And then it just says, the Planning Commission and Budget Committee shall set their own meeting attendance requirements. All members of other regular or ad hoc advisory bodies must attend at least 75% of the full advisory body's noticed meetings, study sessions, and special meetings in each full year of their tenure. A person removed from the advisory body for noncompliance with attendance requirements subsequently may be appointed to fill the vacancy on the advisory body by means of the normal appointment process by that advisory body. So someone can be reappointed. A member should provide at least 48-hour notice to both the chair of the advisory committee and the staff liaison. Most of the time, people just give it to me, I think, which is fine, regarding any planned absence from a scheduled meeting of the advisory body, in the event an unexpected emergency will cause a member to be absent from the meeting, the member must, if possible, notify the chair or the staff liaison within a reasonable time in advance of the meeting. And then alternates are generally not allowed. I could read that section, but it's kind of convoluted and I don't think it really applies. And then each advisory body should review member attendance and report to the city recorder approximately every 6 months. The city recorder will advise the mayor on the need for appointments or reappointments if necessary. And Liz does track attendance on the agendas or in the minutes, I think. And, you know, for us, and this is not actually in this section, but all commissions, right, or at least our commission, we meet once a month, and there's 12 months in a year. However, every commission gets to skip one meeting. We don't generally, but they can. So, I mean, you could take it as 75% of 12 or 75% of 11. And generally, people do notify me in advance. And obviously, there's always situations where people are on vacation or emergencies happen, which actually leads me to one thing. Joy Fate has been having some health issues herself, and which is why she is not in attendance tonight, and has also been having some family health issues, which has made it harder for her to attend. So that's why she wasn't here last week. So both of her absences are excused. But I don't know how long she will be out, but she did want me to share with you all that, you know, she would be here except for these, health issues.
I also spoke with Lita, this week, and she's also got health issues and I think is not planning to continue, but, you know, I will continue to follow up with her. And see. So we may have openings on the commission, an opening on the commission in the near future. Jackie?
I just wanted to mention, and I'll put in a formal letter, but I'm terming out at the end of April, and that will be the end. I will be terming. So I've been actually 5 years, I think. It was 2 years prior to being a counselor for 9 months, and then I came on to Housing and Human Services, served that year, and then I finished out somebody else's term for two. So I've been around for about 5 years now. I think it's time for others. But I just want to mention this because as some people are having health issues, I'm just concerned about will we have a quorum with this very important work coming up with the housing strategy. So I hope all of us will be looking for people who are interested in being on Housing and Human Services, because we could have three vacancies as far as I can see. So I just wanted to give you some advance notice.
Thank you, Jackie. I really appreciate that. We actually, I can't remember who Joy was. When Joy was appointed, we did have three other applicants at the time. So we'll try to reach back out to them and let them know, you know, if Lita does submit her resignation, and hopefully we'll get them filled quickly. So there's been a lot of interest in our commission.
So and am I correct, Heidi, that you're terming out as well?
Decided yet, but now that my husband's fully retired, we would really love to travel, but if we continue to do this by Zoom, it doesn't matter where I am.
Okay.
But that probably will come up in the next year or so.
So I just want to point out that we're going to lose a lot of our collective memories if we lose these key people. So This is big. The other thing that I wanted to say is that we're going to be electing officers soon, and that is a wide open subject. If you have an interest in any of the roles on this commission, reach out to Linda Reed and let her know. There's no hierarchy, there's no tenure, there's no, you know, nothing is assured. If you want to do something, say so. But that's all I have, Rich.
That's great. So we do have left liaison reports, and I'm not looking. I don't know that we have to do them in order. That's Linda and Gina. Chris has done it. Reese, do y'all have things you want to add in at this point? Reese, go ahead.
Okay, I'll be fast. I have a few things. So recently I was approached by the SOU Augsburg chapter at our school. They're looking for volunteers, and they themselves are volunteers. And so I told them that I'm the liaison for the Housing Commission, and I gave them my email, and I haven't heard back yet, but I think they would be a really good resource for what's going on. I'm going to put the link for their section on the website in the chat. It talks a little bit more about, that was a direct message. Sorry, Chris. it talks a little bit more about what they've done and what they plan to do. So I thought that would be useful. So there's that. I think it was about a week ago, Echo told me about the emergency shelter that went in place on the 20th. I reached out to Leah Grice, she is a academic advisor for the sociology and anthropology department, but she also is kind of like up there for my major. So she sent out a mass email to all the people, all the students in the department, talking about it. I don't know about the turnout, but at least word got out. People got the email. I even got the email. So hopefully that helped, but I did do that. And more personally, I don't know if I've said this before, but in my research methods class, we're working on, you know, how research is done. And we are doing a food desert literature review for this program. I think it's called Source. And so I'm going to be giving that to you guys in the next couple of weeks. I think that could be really helpful about food insecurity. It takes sources from the country as a whole, but it's definitely, we're writing it to apply to Jackson County. So it's going to explore some of the solutions and options, and it's also taking into account that we're not trying to do free food stuff. So not so much like community gardens, but more like what is good for the budget where people can still afford to get healthy food. So that's a little bit more of the human service aspect of the commission, mm-hmm. but I will be giving that to you guys soon. And then more personally, part of my final project is to do my own research proposal, and I will be doing it based on the Housing Commission and what I've been seeing. Yeah, okay, glad you're excited. My guiding question is about how college students are just overall disadvantaged, whether it's housing or job security or food security. So the proposal is irrelevant. Like, it's not going to actually be, the research won't be done, but there is a literature review aspect for that that you might find interesting. So both of those things, the food desert one and the one that I'm doing, I'll have out. I'll send it to Linda Reed in about 2 weeks or so. About finals. And then last thing is, in the fall I will be a senior, and I have my capstone project. It's like the big senior project. It's the whole year, and I would like to do it on Housing Commission stuff. And as of now, I would like to survey my fellow students and just see what their experience is with housing and, again, job and food security. So you could consider this proposal like the mini version of that. But I bring this up because it's something to think about. If you want me to ask the student body a specific question or do a more in-depth project, I have a few ideas, but if there's something specific that I can do, you know, I would be getting practicum credit here and then also towards that. So, you know, two birds, just something to think about.
Reese, what is the timeline on that project?
It starts in the fall, and it's basically, I do plan on, I'm going to be here for as long as possible, by the way, so don't worry about me going anywhere, but I'm a senior in the fall, and that's when I'm obligated to take the capstone. So this spring, I'm going to start counting hours for me participating here, and I'm going to have, you know, like, reports. I think Linda Reed is actually my supervisor. That's okay. Yes. Yeah, right? Echoes off. just kidding, but yeah, so that'll start in the fall. But I don't mind doing stuff beforehand. Technically, I've been coming to meetings since like December. I think that was one of the first ones I did. So if anyone has any ideas about something I can do, talking to students and doing research, you should let me know. I'd be happy to do it.
That's super exciting. Yeah, and let me know if I need to sign like for practicum hours or whatever. We can do that. And, you know, we do all kinds of things each year. So I think that there's probably a lot of opportunity to, interface in different ways. And it's exciting.
Oh, Reese, I actually have a question.
Sure.
I wanted to ask your permission. Mm-hmm. I think it would be helpful if we got a little press release into that SOU news release that comes out daily about your appointment to this commission.
Oh, that's really good.
Not so much to like feed your ego, but, although that's great. but to just kind of get the word out there that this is something SOU students can do. Would that be cool with you?
Oh, yeah, totally. I definitely want people to reach out, and that's why I was saying with the Oscar. They were asking if I would volunteer. Yeah. I was like, well, I'm actually with the Housing Commission.
I'll email Leah, because she might be the best person to get that to Joe Mosley on campus.
Yeah, I'll reach out to her. And I do plan, if you have any, like, emergency shelter, whatever, you need volunteers or you need student help, if you let me know, I can forward that to her. Or if you want to do it directly, I can put her email. But she will be the person I'm sending this information to get it out to at least the sew-in department at my school, just so that people can see what's going on. But, yeah, I can reach out about that.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you.
Hey, Gina, do you have anything? I've got a question for you, but do you have any info for us? Again, I'm on the where are we with our recommendations on the emergency shelter? It looks like the city manager sort of took it and ran with it, which is fine. But I do think we need somewhere along the way the council to figure out their role in acknowledging this policy. On the books, we still have a 20-degree emergency shelter thing, which should come off the books, off the law or ordinance, and insert this new one, which seems to be working for us now.
Yeah, that it is working for us. And Rich, as the last that I did speak with you, I emailed city manager Mr. Lazard to see if we can get this on the agenda, because first goes the look ahead, then it goes to the agenda, because it needs to be back in front of the face of council. Council requested it, the commission did it, so now we need to insert it and make it happen. And I did do that, and also I spoke with Mr. Lazard regarding the Ashland shelter over on East Main Street that works with Rogue Retreat. And as we know, that time is ticking and that's going to be gone shortly. I saw that when it came to the CDBG funds that they did write up and a grant proposal for that. So I don't know where that's going. However, one thing that I did is I spoke to Joe about getting together with Linda, and also with Scott Furley to take a look at some city properties, something that I mentioned a year ago when I got on council, where is this city property? So I'm like, I didn't forget. And so Joe he's gone, he'll be back. I spoke to Scott and he's like, let's get with Linda and draw the two people in on this to look at city property, whereas we have electricity or access to electricity or plumbing or access to plumbing, so we can get a sustainable forever place for our unhoused people and that all weather shelter that we're looking for. And thank you so much, Rich, for bringing that up. It is on the look ahead, and now I just look forward to getting it on the agenda. And Linda, I did talk to Joe. He's going to get in touch with you. And I emailed him this morning, too. So when you get back, blah, blah, blah. I know it's just like, get the hook and get her out of here. But, you know, that's what I do. So,
Linda Reed, do you want to give us an update on the CDBG grants that we got? I've kind of looked at them, right? We've all got them now, right?
Yeah, and the only distinction I wanted to let you guys know is that some are for just the CARES Act money and that they're going to be evaluated on their, you know, against each other because they're both applying for one fund. And then the other one is that Aura has a capital fund and Maslow has their sort of what their regular ask is of the regular CDBG funding. And so those will be evaluated against each other as well. Although, I mean, it's not, it's just the CARES Act ones will not be evaluated against the capital or the Maslow because they're different funds. And I believe that the trust fund is it closing tomorrow? I think it might be closing the week after. I can't even remember because we're so out of sequence with things. And so then we'll know then which, you know, if there's any that are overlapping, because that's one of the things that is, I think, in the evaluation for one of those. And I have the evaluation forms. I just haven't emailed them out because I've been dealing with a diverticulitis issue. So
what we're supposed to be doing between now and the next meeting is to read those grants and you follow your evaluation forms that you'll send to us?
Heidi has a comment or a question.
Okay, Heidi.
I just wanted Linda to give us an update on the most recent shelters.
Thank you.
The emergency shelter.
So to answer your question, Rich, before I answer Heidi's question, or to the best of my ability at this point, yes. I know that sometimes it gets overwhelming with the amount of reading that I give you between now and next meeting. So I just want to get those out as quickly as possible. And then, you know, you're going to get another batch. I don't know, maybe one, who knows, for the housing trust fund. But I just want to make sure you guys had enough time to read through them. And then, you know, the evaluation sheets that we have are pretty mild, I think. And certainly there are other aspects we could look at. Or, you know, you can bring it to play, but it's just that basic one about, you know, are they doing a coordination? And so, yeah, that's yes. The short answer to your question is yes. And then Heidi, you know, we anticipated the shelter and I props to Avram, who honestly has done all of the work, all of it. I have been just coordinating with, you know, the city on our end with Ty for the notices, and Ty's also the acting city manager while Joe is away. And you know, with, you know, we went through the whole process with Gary and then Gary left. And so it was, you know, new for Joe to say, okay, here's the resolution we have in place, but here's what we've been doing. And here's, you know, so there was that whole thing. And Joe was very, lovely about the whole thing and like understanding that, yeah, this is what our resolution says, but it's ridiculous. So we really do need to do something. And so I was able to let Avram know in plenty of time. He was able to organize volunteers. And, you know, it's always, this gets really confusing to the community when you look at the weather in advance. You know, you're looking as far as ahead as you can, which is usually a week because 10 days, that's what they give you. And then it changes a lot as you get closer. Sometimes it changes for the better. Sometimes it changes for the worse. But at some point you have to just, you know, call it and make a decision. And part of that decision is, you know, I got to organize volunteers and I got to find a location and I have to set a time and a date. So we did that. And then, you know, the weather got worse. And so Avram was great. He anticipated, you know, each day. And oh, here's the other thing. I noticed, and we didn't do this, Medford has an established weather report that they are referencing. So I was referencing one, Joe was referencing another, Avram was referencing a third one, and they were like, oh, but it's going to be this. Oh, no, this one says it's going to be, you know, 30. And I'm like, okay, let's just all look at the same one going forward so that we can be a little, you know, more accurate. So we have all been looking at the same one. Avram anticipated in looking at that one each day, as it changed, that we would have to add nights. And so he planned accordingly and went ahead and you know, said, if we have to open, will you guys do this? So he did it all. It's been great. We don't pay him, I should say, for all this amazing work he's doing. And he is always very gracious about enjoying doing the work and being there. So all of that being said, we had a long weekend and I had talked to Avram before the start of the weekend and said, you know, I will actually be out of town, but you should totally text me, even though I can't get there, if anything comes up. Nothing came up. And so I did talk to him again on Tuesday when I got back. He said on Sunday night they had 20 people and on Monday night they had 30 people, but I have not talked to him since then. 30 people is a lot for us. We don't normally get that many people. Pioneer Hall, I think, has been working out fairly well. I haven't heard any issues from Avram. He's had plenty of volunteers and Echo. You will be happy to know that Vicky from the COC was given cases of rapid COVID tests from OHA to distribute. So we had a box of those that I was able to give to Avram. And then OHA and ODHS also have a whole website about if someone tests positive in a shelter, like what do we do? Or if you're in a shelter and you've been exposed to someone who's positive, what do we do? And so there's numbers to call because they can quarantine people in those circumstances. I don't know how well that works, but I know that that resource exists and I shared it with Avram. So I don't know how it's been the last few nights. He anticipated, as is, you know, generally what happens, each night the shelter runs, more people come. So I don't know where we're at number-wise. At the debrief we had after the last shelter incidents, we did talk about having a behavior form and, you know, they were running a 24-hour shelter, which made it hard because people were never leaving and coming back in. So it was hard to track each night who was new and who was there before. And so it just kind of became a group of people. So this time people did leave. Today, I think, was the only day that he stayed open later, or he allowed it to stay open later. But they are filling out those forms each day. So they are taking a count.
Can we get a daily NICSL update?
You know,
like Medford does
about that. And the one thing that Ty said is that he felt like it would be redundant to send it out to the same people each time.
When Medford does it, Medford does it.
We don't have to do everything Medford does,
but it's helpful, particularly because it's getting extended until Saturday.
Well, and I
which was not in the original NICSL notification.
And I did send him because I said, and here's the extension. Can you send that out to let people know? And he said, yes. So he felt his stance was we should only send out new information when new information comes.
Well, then we need to actually agree to that in the policy.
Well, oh, Kathy?
So I get a notification when the winter shelter gets extended. From NICSL.
From Medford.
I got one. Are we talking about Medford or talking about Ashland?
We don't get one from Ashland.
Well, he should have said.
I get one. It says Ashland, Oregon, emergency winter shelter extended through Friday night.
And I got that too, but you're saying it's extended now to Saturday. I didn't get that.
No, it's Saturday morning.
Saturday
morning. I got it.
Yeah. Let me look.
So that's the extension one. So I guess.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm not getting, maybe it's just me because I'm not seeing ones from Ashland. Maybe it's weird.
I put it up on Livable Ashland Echo.
Okay.
When I get an extension, I put it up.
Yeah. That's weird. I'm not getting them from Ashland. I am getting them from Medford.
Well, we can talk about.
Okay. It could be just me.
It could be in the policy when we move it forward about. You know, that can be a decision point. And then Liz did also post in the chat that I think that we have an issue with city staff who can post NICSLs. I can't do it. Obviously, I don't have access to that system. And I'm not sure how many people do. I mean, I suppose it's the police chief, the fire chief, city administrator, but not everyone. And I don't know how that works. But ultimately, it will not be me doing any of this probably in the near future. So I don't necessarily need access to the NICSL system. But so at this point, I have to go through someone else to get that done. And I don't know who makes decisions about that.
When I was distributing the leaflets about this at the beginning of this stretch, it actually was really helpful because people had already gotten a notification.
Yeah, I think the notification system through NICSL is great. And I think implementing that the last time was a really great idea. So, yeah. And then what was the other thing I had? Oh, I did want to say just briefly about the Rogue Retreat shelter. Two things. One is that I am in talks with them about ways to generate that operational funding because, you know, it's just not a thing that anyone wants to pay for. And then, you know, the other issue is that piece of property has a planning approval, planning modification approval to have a shelter on it at all through the county, which is sort of forced by some legislation that the state of Oregon passed. But that expired in June of 2022, which is also when our planning approval expires. So I did reach out to Pam Marsh to ask her if that was going to be amended in the upcoming legislative session, and she said yes. And so she and Phil Johncock, who contracts for Rogue Retreat, and was the person who went through the planning process with Aura to get that piece of property approved for a shelter at that location. He also worked with Pam to expand it to some Indian tribes, tribal lands and stuff. So anyway, that was all great. We're so lucky to have Pam as our state representative, and we have such a good relationship with her, and we can communicate so well. So hopefully what that means is that, you know, come June, they won't have to shut down, because essentially the county will have to extend it because the state of Oregon says that you have to approve it, especially if it's in place already. So that's my news about that.
Wow. Very good. Anybody have any other announcements that they want to make? Well, geez, you guys, that was a great meeting in my mind. We really covered the spectrum of housing issues out there, and it looks like we're going to be continuing that. So thank you all for being here tonight, and I guess with that we'll adjourn the meeting and go about our evening business. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Have a good night, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Linda.